Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 18, Episode 50. This is Writing Excuses, the unreliable narrator.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And you can't trust us.
I'm someone.
I'm someone else.
I'm a third person.
I'm Howard.
But
the
are
most
you?
Unreliable answer.
And we are going to be talking today about the unreliable narrator. This is one of my favorite techniques. I actually believe that all narrators are unreliable in their own way, because it's always whenever you're telling a story, even in life, you're telling it from your perspective. But when we talk about unreliable narrators, these are when you're actually trying on purpose to have your narrator either believe or represent something different than the actual facts of what's happening on the page. And I have this whole construct / theory of unreliable narrators that I'm going to pitch you all in sections. So the first part I'm wondering about is, do you think it matters if the narrator knows that they are unreliable versus if they are fooling themselves and therefore fooling the reader?
I think it's incredibly important because it changes the relationship to the audience. Mm. So if your audience is reading a book that has an unreliable narrator who does not realize that that is what they're doing, then we are going through that journey with them. We are experiencing their slow realization that they are being unreliable, or we are watching them descend further and further into a break from reality, right? So there's us walking with somebody if the narrator is being deliberately unreliable and lying to us, then it's a different kind of experience where we are sort of, the audience is almost antagonistic to the narrator in a certain way. Doesn't mean that the narrator can't be sympathetic and fun and all of those things, and almost has to be to balance that out, but it requires a different care that you're taking of the audience to make sure that when the reveal comes that they've been lied to, that they don't feel betrayed and angry at you, the author.
I played How to Host a Murder once, and I was the killer, but the first two pages of my booklet were stuck together, and I did not know I was the killer. I didn't know. And so I was the most convincing liar out of anybody, because I was utterly innocent in my own mind of this killing. We went through the end, and yeah, I totally got away with it. They're like, okay, who's the murderer? Who has the, I don't know. Everybody look at the, everybody. We passed around our books. Somebody said, Howard. And they peel it apart like, you did it. Like, oh, I did? Yay, I got away with it. And to me, that's the big distinction. The unreliable narrator who knows they're lying can be tripped up in their lie, can be dishonest. They're dishonest with an agenda. Whereas the unreliable narrator who just doesn't know the truth is going to be utterly honest about what they know and is, to my mind, more convincing.
Mm-hmm. As we're talking about this, I'm thinking about something that I did in Relentless Moon, which is that my main character has two secrets. And one of them she's keeping secret for societal reasons. She's has anorexia. And the other she's keeping secret for spoiler reasons, which is... And so she's keeping those both secret from the reader. But then she also has secrets that she is keeping from the other characters. Mm. And so one of the things that I was, but that she's sharing with the readers. So one of the things that I was playing with in that was having her lies be in the same patterns.
Mm.
So that when the reveal happened, that you recognized that you had been lied to in the same way that the other characters had been lied to about this different packet of information.
Ooh, that's cool.
That is really cool.
I was thinking about the word reveal. So what I think is really interesting is that secrets are meant to be revealed. Mm-hmm. And so part of the difference between these two unreliable narrators is what the story is building towards.
Yeah.
So if you're hiding a piece of information, your narrator is on purpose, at some point there's a general sense that that will be revealed in a specific moment, or like it will come to light. Whereas if the person is fooling themselves, I think of it more of a revelation, a slow revelation by the reader that something is happening that they shouldn't trust. But it doesn't has to have, there's not necessarily a moment, there can be, but it doesn't have to go to like one, like, and then, you know, you'll never guess what really happened. But more, as you're getting more and more details about the world, you're like, there seems to be something that's askew. Mm-hmm. And that kind of brings me to one craft technique that I learned about in creating unreliable narrators, which is that if they don't know that they're being unreliable, you have to give some sort of signpost to the reader that they are.
Yes.
Usually by bringing in something that the audience can make a very clear judgment about, mm-hmm. and be like, well, that isn't the way I would interpret it. And they're interpreting it very differently. So something is off. Mm-hmm. In Wolfie Things, there's a moment where he sees his mother crying. And he's like, she's still trying to like salt the, you know, the food,
yeah.
right.
you know, with her tears, like just cause like, and like, that's so off. Like she's obviously upset about like the appearance of this wolf and mm-hmm. what's going on there, but he misinterprets it so wrong, like so badly
yeah.
that you're thinking, okay, there's like something, he's not seeing the world the way that other people see the world.
Yeah.
How do you make sure in that moment that the reader isn't just like, oh, you, the author, missed something, or like, oh, that doesn't make sense to me. This book is bad, right? Like, because I think when I see that done poorly, that is the result, right? Yeah. The result can be like, oh, I'm just not connecting with this. I don't understand this character. They're acting illogically in some way. But when it's done really well, for me, that's like the most exciting thing, right? Like, I loved that moment of realizing like, oh man, this mom had a way different experience than what this kid can see. And it makes sense because he's a kid, right? Yeah. Like, so...
I hang a lantern on it It creates conflict. Another character in the scene, I use it a lot with world building. I especially use it with world building when I realize, man, I built a thing earlier and I had characters talk about it and I don't like it. I don't think it works that way. I need them to have been wrong. And so another character comes in and says, hey, guys, I think you're talking about this all wrong. Let's have an argument. And there's comedy and there's argument. And the reader now sees, oh, yeah, I had some questions about that too. But now that a character is asking questions about it, I'm fine. And they don't actually need to resolve it. They just need to, question what was happening. And now the reader no longer blames you, the writer, because they're like, oh, yes, my concern has now been raised in the text. I'm fine. I'm on board with whatever continues.
Yeah, parallax can be really useful if you're in a longer text, right? So if you're in a novel, you have multi-POV, you can have sort of two characters looking at the same thing from slightly different angles, and you can sort of see the difference between them. In a really tight, constrained text right, with a single voice, like, how do you make that clear?
I think one way is by bringing in an outside influence. One of the reasons, one of the roles that the Conjure Man plays in Snake Season is to present a point of view in the narrative that is not the point of view of the character.
Yeah.
And to see her interact with something that I could give you, like, here are the actual facts of what's happening in this interaction, and here's the way she's seeing this interaction, and sort of show how those two things are diverging from each other as a way for you to be like, okay, something is a little different here. And then at the very end, there's the husband's, you know, point of view, and what he says in dialogue is another way of saying, like, this is where he's just describing exactly what he's seeing and what he understands. And that's also a way to show an even greater contrast. And as the contrast between the character's perspective and these other characters that they interact with become greater and greater, it gives a sense that there's more and more unreliability. I think the other thing that's really important is to give your character an absolutely genuine belief and reason for believing what they do. You know, I think if you're like, oh, I'm just going to have them misunderstand this as a technique, it doesn't feel true to the character. Like, Nikki really believes that that's what's going on with his mom. He's really wrong. But what his belief is seems like it's really genuine and it's coming from a place of heart. And I think when people are sympathetic to your characters, then they care about them and they want to understand why they're seeing the world the way that they are. And that really brings them into the, oh, this is what the character is about mode versus this is what the author is doing mode. You basically keep them tightly in the head of the narrator so that they don't have time to think about what else is going on.
Yeah. But I think the just to draw a line under the thing that you said, which is in that signposting that Howard was talking about, that you present the reader with something that is clearly recognizable to the reader as a, you know, like his mother is looking out the window and giggling. It's like, okay, she's not afraid of this wolf. And then having that obvious misinterpretation then sets them up, before you get to all of the other misinterpretations, sets the reader up to know, to look for that.
Yeah.
One of the other pieces along those lines, which is I think something that you're also doing with Nikki, is what I call the doth protest too much, that they spend a lot of energy trying to justify their belief. That they think about it and talk about it.
Yeah.
Way more than it would be. Otherwise, it'd be like, oh, mom's upset again. And you move on. But it's like, mom's upset because of this. Or actually, it's because of this. And, you know, like, they doth protest too much.
Exactly. All right. I love this. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I have another question to pose for you in my grand, unified, unreliable narrator theory.
Or will we?
Hey, writers. Are you thinking about learning a new language? I think exploring the world, experiencing other cultures, and being able to communicate with people outside your everyday experience lets you create richer, better stories. A great way to do that is with Rosetta Stone, a trusted expert for over 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. They use an immersive technique which leads to fast language acquisition. It's an intuitive process that helps you really learn to speak, listen, and most of all, think in the language you're trying to learn. They also feature true accent speech recognition technology that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a voice coach in your home. Learn at home or on the go with a desktop and mobile app that let you download and access lessons even when you're offline. And it's an amazing value. A lifetime membership gives you access to all 25 languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Japanese, and, of course, Korean. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Writing Excuses listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Making your mental health a priority is always a challenge. And I think it's easy to not prioritize it, especially when you're trying to figure out how to write a book. I think we have some deep cultural idea that artists should be tortured and depressed to make their best work. But in my experience, struggling to find clarity and motivation will hurt your process a lot more than help it. In my own life, therapy has been essential to figuring out how to navigate an industry seemingly designed to give all of us anxiety. Being able to talk to an expert can help you set better boundaries, find a balance between the demands of your work and your art, and navigate the complexities of being a published writer. That said, finding a therapist is never easy, especially if you're not in a major city like I am. That's where a service like BetterHelp can be of use to help you start the process while you figure out what your needs are for your mental health journey. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/WX today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, .com/WX.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
This week, I have a short story collection for you. It is Lost Places by Sarah Pinsker. Sarah Pinsker is an amazing short story writer. You gotta love that there are two Hugo and Nebula winning short stories in this collection, To Truths and a Lie and Where Oaken Hearts Do Gather. But there's just, it's story after story after story. One of the things I find really interesting is that she thinks about the world in such a fascinating way. And I feel like there are the stories that she's really well known for, but some of the quieter pieces that are in here, like I frequently hear music in the very heart of noise, are just really beautiful love letters, I think, to the form and just expertly crafted short story experiences. So that's Lost Places by Sarah Pinsker. We're back. We weren't lying about it. So the second question that I have for you all about the unreliable narrator is the scope of the unreliability. And so the way I think about this is like you can have someone, like you were talking about your character having a secret. Mm-hmm. So that's like a very specific thing. Yeah. The way that the rest of the world, everything is accurate, but this one thing is something that they're hiding. And then I think about somebody like Marie in Snake Season, who his entire worldview is, you know, a little off. Like, yep. It's not like she's hiding something specific. She's just misinterpreting everything around her.
The slow build to realizing how wide the scope is of her unreliability is so much the deliciousness of that story.
Yeah.
I've referenced this before. The lore master for The Elder Scrolls Online, one of his first challenges was the fact that the Elder Scrolls games were terribly inconsistent in the way the history of that universe played out. And their solution was unreliable narrators. Anytime we describe something, we want to describe it, you know, in the narrative from the point of view of a character, because a character can be wrong. But if we describe it, you know, without quotes around it, then people are going to take it as gospel truth. What was funny to me and what I just now realized with regard to scope is that in that article, the lore master never used the term unreliable narrator. It was exactly what he was talking about, but he never used that term. And on the one hand, I thought, you can't possibly not know the literary technique you're using. Mm-hmm. And just today I realized, oh, wait, you're writing game software. You don't want to put the word unreliable in the text in front of the gamers because you will communicate a whole new level of unreliability to them.
Well, this kind of goes to one of the earliest points that Aaron was making, which is anytime you have a character proclaiming the worldview, there's something always unreliable about that because we are, our subjectivity inherently influences how we see the world. This is going to be a minor spoiler for N.K. Jemisin's The Fifth Season.
Yeah.
But there's a moment in the book where you realize that the narration is second person, that you were being told the story by somebody. And that for me was such a moment of like, oh no, everything is now unreliable, right? Yeah. That subjectivity has been influencing the story this whole time. And for me, that was just like a thrilling moment because it just, by shifting me into a character's perspective, suddenly the scope of the unreliability was infinite. It was this entire story, this entire world.
That was such a gut punch. I was actually thinking about the broadness that you're talking about with Ghost. Mm. Because Ghost has two things going on. One is that she has been made an unreliable narrator by someone removing her memories. But she also, like when they take Princess to the
memory
parlor, booth, the second time, none of her plan is in that narration, even though it's kind of clear to the audience. But she is justifying why she's making these choices. Mm-hmm. And it's such a broad, like, there's so much broadness there, I think.
Yeah, she shifts from accidental to deliberate, unreliable narrator in a way that is very fun, and it is such a heel turn in the best ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny, too, because I think of thinking about her looking at Princess's memories, like, it was interesting. Like, there's a little bit of her questioning of Princess as whether or not Princess is actually a reliable narrator of her own relationship with her father and what was happening, you know, before. And so that, I think, is also one of the reasons I love playing with memory is that, like, memory is one of the least reliable narrators that we have, and yet it is the way that we experience the world and kind of go through it.
Yeah, and the fact that Princess was a reliable narrator was the unforgivable crime, right? The realization that someone was dared to tell the truth was unbearable.
Yeah. Dared to tell the truth, and also all of the things that Princess may not have understood about her own situation.
Exactly.
It's like, there are so many layers of unreliability in that story and revelation.
And I have a question. Speaking of sort of reveals about characters with secrets, which is something I do less of, I tend to do like unreliable on a broad scale. Mm-hmm. How do you make sure that a character holding a secret doesn't feel like they can no longer be trusted in any way and versus just in this one way?
So one of the things for me, one of my pet peeves is holding the secret too long from the reader.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the ways that I build trust with my readers is that I will I'll raise a question and then answer a question, raise a question, answer a question, then raise a question, not answer the question.
Mm.
So with this one, because I knew that she had two secrets, I went ahead and gave the answer to the first one within the anorexia, within the first couple of chapters. And I feed it to you a little bit slowly, and then I give the answer so that so at that point you're like, oh, now I can trust the character because they have let me in on this one secret. But then all of the other secrets that she's holding, the other secret, you're like, well, she must be being forthcoming with me now because she was honest about this other thing.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
I would do the, you're familiar with the term save the cat. Early in a story, you have a character save the cat, and now we know, oh, this is a good person. All right. That trick works after you have revealed that someone was keeping a secret. You have them do the save the cat, and we're like, oh, this person is actually okay. They've done a good thing. Now, you may be mistrusting whether that cat was actually worth saving. You know, maybe it was a feral rabid cat and they're saving it in order to kill us all. I don't know. But you get the point here. You're trying to, you adjust that likability slider strongly. You know, crank that all the way up so that we're willing to trust them again.
Yeah. This may be jumping a little bit too ahead and also maybe too much of a personal taste thing, but I always want to caution writers about over-relying on the twist type reveal.
Yes.
Right. So two movies that are incredibly popular, so this may undermine my point, but The Sixth Sense and Old Boy, the Park Chan-wook movie, both rely on last minute reveals that completely recontextualize all the action that has happened up until that point. I, as an audience member in both of those cases, even though there's other aspects of those movies that I really admire and really like, felt almost betrayed by the narrator, right? And the narrator in this case wasn't a character, but it was the authorial voice of those movies. And so I got mad at M. Night Shyamalan, the person, which was unfair. And I don't hold a grudge against the man. He's fine. He makes good movies. But like, there was an aspect of that.
Doth protest too much.
I'm trying to be nice.
It's okay to be mad at him for the Avatar movie.
Sure. But I mean, there's a way in which that twist can really undermine your audience's relationship to the text. Now, that can be done very, very well. Sometimes that twist will have that backward ripple effect. One example I think of is Neon Genesis Evangelion, which I rewatched recently. There's a late reveal of Asuka's character that makes you recontextualize why she is the way she is in a way that I think is beautifully done and makes a character that I find very annoying, suddenly, for me, one of the most sympathetic characters in the show. So anyways, I'm not getting into the spoilers of that, but there are ways to do it really, really well. And there are ways that I think sometimes if you don't have enough time after to resettle back into the story, it can just leave you with the feeling of being uncomfortable and unsettled in a way that is unpleasant to me narratively.
So I have this personal theory that one of the reasons that, that particular thing happens to early career writers is that they are themselves unreliable in that they didn't know the answer to something. So they were just like, well, now it's a big secret that I'll reveal later. And then they keep going until they hit a point where they have to reveal it, and they are justifying themselves to it, justifying that choice to themselves all along as, well, I'm doing it this way because I'm going to build tension and we'll have this big twist. And really it's that they just don't know the answer and don't want to write those scenes.
Yeah.
You've read the first 3 years of Schlock Mercenary.
I'm not, you know, pointing like...
Oh, man.
Doth protest too much.
I will say, like, I think a lot of it's also trust in yourself as a writer.
Yeah.
That without a gimmick, people will still want to read your story.
Yes. Yeah.
One of the things that I struggled with a lot in trying to write Wolfy things was that I tried to make some of the relationship between him and the wolf like a lot more like a lot less clear in original versions, like where it was like a big twist at the end. And I would give it to people and they were like, that's fine, but like I really didn't need to be surprised by that. And in some ways, not being like being able to have your own revelation as a reader earlier and then see that you understand the truth of things and it's still going to go horribly wrong was actually more fun than the feeling of like, you got me, happened at the end of the story.
This is the thing I've learned as a GM is that it has been way more fun just to tell my player stuff and just be like, here's what's going on. And then they're like, oh no, that's bad. And then they have to figure out what to do with that information. And then you can have more twists and reveals, but it's grounded in them knowing what's going on versus me trying to like surprise them with a big gotcha moment. And I think that can be disorienting and unsatisfying for me as a storyteller and for them as the audience.
We're recording in Utah. One of my favorite hikes here in Utah is to a place that we call First Falls up above Sundance. And from the starting point of the hike, you can look up the hill into the cirque up the mountain into the cirque, and you can see the little ribbon of waterfall. You know that that's the ending. You know that that's your destination. Mm-hmm. And as you walk, the scenery is beautiful. The plants, the bees, the bugs, the whatever else. There is this experience on the hike that is just wonderful. But the whole time you're hiking, the waterfall is now no longer visible. And then you come around a corner to it, and it's bigger, and it's loud, and it's wonderful. And the whole voyage has been rewarding. It was not that last turn that made it worthwhile.
Exactly.
That last turn.
It's was a payoff, but it's
it was
on,
a payoff, yeah. But it was not the whole reason you took the trip.
Exactly.
I think for me, the key is, what emotion do you want the reader to have? And is that emotion, oh, that author is clever? Or is the emotion, the crippling dread, what emotion are you trying to have with the reader?
Exactly.
All right. Now, we have already been slightly unreliable about our 15 minutes long, so I am going to bring this together into my grand unified theory for 2 seconds, and then we will go to the homework, which is to kind of think about how these two things intersect. And we'll put a lovely graphic in the show notes so that you can check it out. But thinking about what you want to do, I often think about how these two things come together, how intentional the narrator is in their unreliability, or the author is in their unreliability, and how broad it is. So you've got your M. Night Shyamalan twist. Mm-hmm. That's when you're being broad. The entire nature of what you thought about this thing is wrong, and I'm going to tell you at the end intentionally. You've got something that's a secret, that's intentional and specific. I am not going to tell you about this one aspect of me, but everything else is the way you think it is. There's what I call the memory hole, which is unintentional and specific. That's I've repressed the memory of that time I killed that guy.
The pages of my How to Host a Murder book are stuck together.
Exactly. But everything else you did was actually accurate to the character. It was just those stuck pages. And then lastly, the false belief, which is my favorite, which is when you're broadly wrong about everything around you.
I have to say, when Aaron first showed me this chart, I then spent the next 10 minutes in a fugue state just categorizing everything I've ever read into each of these categories. It is one of the most useful infographics I've seen about this topic.
Yep.
And Aaron, you're very good at this.
Yeah.
Thank you. And with that, we will go to the homework.
All right. Take an event that you are familiar with, which probably means it has to be something that personally happened to you, and write about it as truthfully as possible. Then write about it from the point of view of someone who knows the basics, but not the whole truth, sort of the memory hole. For bonus points, tell the story a third time from the point of view of a lying liar with an agenda.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
We love hearing about your successes. Have you sold a short story or finished your first novel? Tell us about it. Tell us about how you've applied the stuff that we've been talking about. Use the hashtag WXSuccess on social media or drop us a line at success@writingexcuses.com.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dong Wan Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.